Miracy.
And she's gone well beyond a typical online course structure of, you know, just having good content or even having, you know, good content with actions for people to take and things for them to share. Like, she's really thought about, what does it look like to make it comfortable and engaging for people to learn in a meaningful way?
Hello, and welcome to Course Lab, the show that teaches creators like you how to make better online courses. I'm Danny Eney, the founder and CEO of Miracy, and I'm here with my co-host, Abe Crystal, the co-founder of Rizuku.
Hey there, Danny.
In each episode of Course Lab, we showcase a course and creator who is doing something really interesting, either with the architecture of their course or the business model behind it, or both. Our guest today is Corey Melanson. Corey is the president of Sea Change Collab, a company that ignites transformational learning and impact. Corey, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's start with the backstory. Just, you know, who are you? What do you do? How did you come to be doing it? And how did you make your way to the world of online courses?
Yeah, so I am a facilitator and instructional designer. So the first course that I launched was called Beyond Talk and Text, and that's now shifted to be called Online by Design. So as a facilitator, I was really aware that as everyone shifted online, they would be struggling to figure out how to do that in a way that's really collaborative, in a way that, you know, values inclusion, makes kind of a space really safe for folks to be online together, but also that gets results in a way that wasn't just about talking or writing stuff in chat. And so I was going through my own learning curve around that. So things like online whiteboards and, you know, how do we use this thing called Annotate in Zoom, for example, and how to create meaningful dialogue processes to invite greater participation and engagement. So that was my first course. As I say, I launched that course in September 2020. There was so much interest in that first course that I just started getting calls from companies across Canada. So I'm based in the East Coast of Canada. And I started to get calls to say, hey, we need this too. And can you do this with my team or with our team? And so I delivered the course 15 times in the next 6 months. So I built it as a 6-week course, a flipped classroom approach, and ended up developing it, as I said, in Rizuku as my learning management system. And it really, I kind of couldn't even keep up with the demand. So when I say flipped classroom, what I mean is a flipped classroom is a type of blended learning where participants are introduced to content at their own pace and practice working through it in a live synchronous session.
Cool. And how have the offerings evolved since then?
Since then, so I actually just launched my second course. I was kind of so busy delivering that first course in that 12 months. That was one of the, you know, the focus of what I was doing. I am just actually finishing the next course. Tomorrow is the last session of the next training course. And it has a very different focus. So it is called All In, Allyship and Inclusion Leadership. And so I'm working with leaders and change makers from across Canada to really build on their allyship and inclusion skills. And really using, of course, all of those same approaches as the Online by Design. So using my facilitation and instructional design. And now that, you know, my company has a plan to develop and deliver a range of courses. So a blended model, which I think is really key to transformational learning. So people having the opportunity to meet synchronously, you know, live. In my case, it's once a week, but also the ability to digest and work through material kind of on their own in a self-paced way. So I'm developing courses that meet different needs. So one being a longer course, a 6-week course, one being some on-demand, shorter training courses, and as well as maybe even some shorter kind of blended approaches. So really kind of taking the success of that first model really my second training used that similar model, that 6-week model. And now I'm beginning to experiment with some different kinds of training.
Are there areas you would like to talk about in regards to your course or interesting things that you found working in terms of learning design or how you engage with your students or what would be most interesting for you to share about your course, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I hear from people in my courses is that many of them haven't had the opportunity to engage in really a blended or a flipped classroom approach. And so that in and of itself is new to some people. And I think the mix of the ability to like learn at their own pace, but really also focus on other people in the courses. So I build a model that includes a reflection each week. They have to submit a reflection and an assignment, and their peers offer them feedback. And to me, that is part of the transformation. And I've used different models for that. Sometimes I've engaged what I call wisdom groups. And so people in a 6-week course then are with a smaller cohort of, let's say, 5 to 8 people. Typically, I try to group people together in time zones so that if they wanted to connect outside of the course, they could. When we begin our live session, the first thing, you know, beyond a welcoming and a bit of an introduction and overview of the live session that week, they have wisdom group reflections. And so in smaller breakout groups, they reflect on what are they taking away? What are some of the ahas or insights of the past week? My latest course, I actually co-developed with an Indigenous leader from PEI, again on the East Coast of Canada. And we actually developed a full circle reflection using the 4 elements of the medicine wheel. And so I think building that sort of holistic approach, right? It's not just that we're thinking things, we're inviting people to reflect on emotional elements of their learning, physical elements, mental and spiritual elements of their learning. So taking a really holistic approach to how they are learning, how are they integrating the learning and what they're taking away from some of the content.
So, Corey, I'm a big fan of peer-based feedback systems, both because it's a scalable model, like you're more and more coaches or more and more consultants or more and more of your time to do it, but also because, you know, people learn as much or more from the giving of feedback than the receiving. But a concern that people often have is that, you know, well, isn't that kind of the blind leading the blind if they're all kind of going through the course together, which it can be if it's not structured effectively. So how do you organize your peer feedback in a way that gives people the guardrails to give that good feedback so that it is effective?
Yeah, so I'm reading all of the peer feedback and I'm asking questions about it if I think that it may not, you know, be exactly in line. I also invite people into a model where I invite them to give feedback in a way that certainly, you know, shares first of all, appreciation for what the person has done, but also invites them to ask some questions. So I give a bit of a framework around that. One rapid feedback tool I like to use is just called I Like, I Wish, I Wonder. And so that I often use as a frame for peers to give feedback. So what's one thing you like about what this person shared? What do you wish? And then what do you wonder? And I just find it an easy way to kind of frame and give those guardrails in terms of feedback.
It sounds like a thread that runs through a lot of what you've built is kind of a generous and supportive culture of learning for the students, right? You know, it's the sort of thing that if the dynamic were toxic, you know, the peer feedback would not work and people would not want to engage and they would stop showing up. What do you do to create and cultivate that culture where people, you know, want to contribute, they're safe and comfortable to be vulnerable and to engage? How do you create that experience?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think through a number of ways. So one, of course, at the beginning of every training, I do an assessment. So I send out a survey ahead of time to ask, first of all, you know, where people are at in terms of some of the learning objectives, how confident do they feel? to get a sense of where they're at. But I also ask them the question of what would make this a safer and more inclusive learning space for you. And I share that back in the creation of group agreements. So we build the group agreements in this first session to really understand, you know, what does it mean to create an environment where kind of everyone can learn in a really positive way. I think the second thing that I do is I share an anonymous whiteboard platform. So usually that's something like Google Jamboard or Padlet. And I share that at the beginning of each module and invite people to ask their questions anonymously or invite their, you know, their insights, their ahas, or their questions. And that's been a really valuable tool. Particularly, my second course focuses on inclusion and issues of belonging and equity. And there's a lot of questions out there that people have, or they feel really like they don't know where to start. How do I start asking questions, for example, about, you know, someone with a disability? How do I even know what words are the right ones to use? So by using an anonymous tool, it has really helped create a space where people feel like they're not asking dumb questions or the wrong question. And we've heard the feedback that this is the first time they felt like they could ask these kinds of questions and not be, you know, considered like they're doing something wrong, for example.
Corey, a lot of what you described is very, like, you've got your template, you've got your course materials, but then, you know, there is you looking at people's submissions and giving feedback and reviewing. There is, you know, the co-creative norms of the group. Like, there's a certain amount of customization, personalization on a per cohort basis. Can you give our listeners just some sense of the business math behind this? Like, you know, in a typical course, how many people do you have? Roughly, what are they paying? How much of your time does it take? Like, help people understand how the business math works.
Sure. I would say this isn't necessarily my strong suit. I love the content and the process, but I also, you know, have a business to run. And so I started my first course, I priced at $497. And certainly, you know, kept hearing, no, this isn't enough. And so I did make the leap in my second course to $997. And I always build in some accessible spaces. So that's something that, you know, just part of my own kind of values in terms of, I want to be able to offer this to people who need it and may not be able to afford it. And so leave a few spaces open for a sliding scale. So at $997, the latest course, I think we have 37 people in the course over the 6 weeks. And certainly the first, we're running it, of course, as a pilot. And so we're kind of learning from the process and seeing how much of our time is really engaged in the process. And so maybe you can do the math. But so in that 6 weeks, that's about, with 37 people in the training at about $1,000, you know, roughly that's $37,000. And now that the course is created, we're already filling up a second cohort. And then while there is a certain amount of customization, there are a few key moments along the way that are customized. But now that we've built the content as well as the, you know, agendas and materials for the live sessions, really the customization is in figuring out, you know, again, the questions that people have and pointing them to some of the resources and the materials that we have as part of the course. So while we're only preparing to do this a second time, I do know from the first training that I offered 15 times that I was then able to kind of show up, you know, 2 hours every week with a little bit of customization within each training cohort. But beyond that, there wasn't a lot of it.
That's fantastic. I don't have any other questions. Corey, thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you.
Abe, do you want to do the readout?
Corey Melanson is an educator and master facilitator who combines her presentations with transformation. You can learn more about her and her systems at seachangecolab.com. That's S-E-A, change, colab.com.
Now stick around for my favorite part of the show, where Abe and I will pull out the best takeaways for you to apply to your course. So, Abe, I had a bunch of notes that I wrote down. What jumped out to you?
Yeah, I mean, Cora is a really interesting person to learn from because it's evident that she's put a ton of time and effort into really trying to create a meaningful learning environment for her participants. And she's gone like well beyond a typical online course structure of, you know, just having good content or even having, you know, good content with actions for people to take and things for them to share. Like, she's really thought about what does it look like to make it comfortable and engaging for people to learn in a meaningful way.
Well, and, you know, she has obviously the big advantage of a background in instructional design and process facilitation and so forth. But what jumped out to me was that, you know, when you leverage a lot of these best practices like, you know, blended learning and mixing synchronous and asynchronous class opportunities and, you know, all that kind of stuff, what we kind of talk about under the umbrella of a hybrid course where, you know, you're not focusing on a silver bullet of, oh, my whole course, everything has to be this one model, but, you know, you have the whole toolbox and you reach for whatever tool makes sense. You're able to deliver a really transformational experience, but you're also able to do it in a very cost-effective and profitable way, right? She talked about launching a new pilot, which is, you know, $37,000 of revenue for a 6-week program. I don't know how much of her time exactly it's taking, although it sounds like not a huge amount, you know, a handful of hours a week. But, you know, a lot of people launching a pilot, even if you were, you know, going to be working 5, 10, 15, 20 hours a week for 6 weeks to make $37,000, a lot of people would be very happy with that math. And it looks like she's not even spending anywhere near that amount of time. So when you really give yourself the space and license to play with all those dials, you can arrive at kind of this optimal configuration where people get the most high value, hands-on, interactive, dynamic experience, but it's really a minimum effective dose in terms of your time and personal investment.
Yeah, it makes sense. And then on the learning side, and I think it also speaks to why people are willing to sign up for and invest in her programs, because she's able to communicate that they are going to be effective. But she's come up with practical strategies to help people learn from each other. Like, it's kind of easy and nice to say, like, oh, we're going to have lots of peer interaction and people are going to learn from and share with each other. But a lot of times that just breaks down in practice if you don't, like, give people clear ways to do that. And it seems like she's put a lot of work into, like, giving her participants really good models to follow. So, I mean, one specific practical thing she shared that I think people could model and test in their own courses is the I like, I wish, I wonder model, which I thought was pretty cool. I'd never heard it presented in quite that format before. So I think the idea is, like, getting people to give their peers comments in the form of, hey, this is something I like about what you shared in the course. This is something that I wish you had shared or, you know, provide more of. And this is something I wonder about, or I'm curious about your contribution. And it seems like a really good structure that could encourage people to open up and share more deeply.
Yeah, and she got pretty detailed and granular about a number of the kind of instructional design practices that she baked into the design of her courses. So, you know, we won't kind of pull out all the best takeaways because that would just be like repeating what, you know, our listeners heard like 10 minutes ago. But what I will call out is that, you know, there were two things that kind of jumped out to me from more of a business standpoint, right? One is that when you combine momentum and quality, that tends to beget even more momentum, right? Every time she runs a course, people are talking and they're sharing, and that brings in even more people. I remember a conversation I had years ago with Michael Port, who was saying that, you know, when it comes to speaking, like public speaking at events and that sort of thing, everyone's focused on the wrong thing. Everyone's like, how can I book more gigs? And his perspective is, you know, if you're really good, then every gig you do should lead to one or two or three more gigs because people hear you and they want you to speak. Right. And so really leaning into that quality level is the key to longevity and scalability and the marketing efforts of your business. And I'm seeing a very parallel kind of effect here. The other thing that jumped out to me, and this was like, it was like two sentences. It was a bit of a throwaway, but there was a ton of insight there, which is that she talked about, you know, wanting to make it accessible and having a few spots for a sliding scale. And, you know, that's a great thing to do if that's what your values are and you want to be able to do that. But the insight that could easily be missed is that for you to do that, you have to make sure that you're charging enough and you have enough of a margin that there is room for you to, you know, do the sliding scale or have a few people who are on scholarship or go above and beyond for the people you want to, because, you know, the economics are not such that you're already kind of stretched to the max. So building in that margin that allows you to be generous is really important, I think.
Yeah, Good points. I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up, unless you have anything else.
That's all I've got. You want to do the readout?
Thank you for listening to Course Lab. I'm Abe Crystal, co-founder and CEO of Rizuku, here with Dan Eaney, founder and CEO of Miracy. Course Lab is part of the Miracy FM podcast network, which also includes Just Between Coaches, Making It, and Once Upon a Business. This episode of Course Lab was produced by Cynthia Lamb. Jeff Gubberton assembled the episode. Danny Eaney is our executive producer. Post-production by Post Office Sound. Big thanks to Corey Melanson for coming onto the show today. To find out more about her, head on over to seachangecolab.com. That's seachangecolab.com. And to make sure you don't miss the really great episodes coming up on Course Lab, follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. If you like the show, a starred review would really help us to know that we're on the right track and we should keep making episodes. So thank you, and we'll see you next time.